Okay, Rabosai, let's begin. So we find ourselves on Gimel Amud Beis, that is 3B. And I think it would still be to the first power for those who are following along in Art Scroll. And it begins with Amar Rava Pshitali. So while you're looking for where that begins, I'll give you a quick recap of what we learned last time. Previously on Maseches Megillah, I'm too used to saying Makos, I had to pause there. Previously on Maseches Megillah, we basically are in a tournament right now where we are pitting major fundamental mitzvos against each other and asking the question, when they are in conflict, which one reigns supreme, which one will be triumphant and supersede the other principle. So, just for those of us who weren't keeping score, or for those like myself who could use a refresher, here is our rankings, our current sports rankings that we have over here in ascending order, starting from the bottom, working our way up to the most supreme. First, we have Talmud Torah D'Yachid. Now, by the way, this doesn't necessarily mean that one is more important than the other. It might just mean that certain things might be more urgent or necessary or have to be addressed right away. For instance, Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, we say Talmud Torah Kenega Kulam. Talmud Torah is you take all these mitzvos, you put it on one side of the scale, you take Talmud Torah, and it's Kenega Kulam. It's equivalent to all these other mitzvos that we can do. We say an Eilu Devarim every morning. So it doesn't necessarily mean that these things are more important than Talmud Torah, but it might just be that because they, like, think about Mikra Megillah, reading Megillah. Megillah, you only get to read, okay, I guess not once, twice during the night and then the day. We'll talk about that later. But Talmud Torah, you get the chance, thank God, to do it every day. So here's our rankings. We first have Talmud Torah D'Yachid. We have an individual studying Torah on a personal basis. Then we have the temple service, the avodah, which supersedes individual Talmud Torah. But we said Talmud Torah to Rabbin, public Talmud Torah, everyone gathering to hear the sermon on Shabbos or to come to a shir, which is a public established forum for learning Torah, that supersedes the temple worship. Remember how Yehoshua, he was brought to account by the angel, not for neglecting to bring the Karban Tamid, but for neglecting to teach Torah to the Jewish people. But then Mikra Megillah, we said we drop everything. Remember, we're going to see in the Gemara in a moment. Rebbe and his students, they dropped everything. They closed their Gemaras. They left the Beis Medrash and they went to the shul to hear the Megillah be read. And then on top of Megillah, it would seem, it's unclear from the Gemara, but my understanding is that earlier we're talking about the study of Torah. But Kavod HaTorah, honoring Torah, is the most supreme value that we have as of yet. And we know this because, I mean, think about it. Any yeshiva bachur shouldn't be allowed to go to the funeral of a Gadol HaDor, of a great rabbi. However, we know that Kavod HaTorah, honoring the Torah, supersedes even the study of Torah, which makes sense because if one doesn't value the Torah that they're studying, then their Torah is just qualitatively not the same thing as someone who honors and understands the value of the Torah that they are studying. So there we have it. And you know what? Don't take it from me. The Gemara will rehash a little bit of this right now. So here we go. Amar Rava, again, Gimel Amud Beis, 3B. I think it's to the first power in Art Scroll. Amar Rava, Pshitali Avodo Mikra Megillah. So Rava's basically going to state a number of things that are obvious to him, a number of things that are obvious as to which mitzvah supersedes the other. And then at the end of this list, he's going to have a question of where he pits two things against each other, and he's not quite sure which one is superior to the other. Or again, not superior, but supersedes. Amar Rav, Pshitali Avodo Mikra Megillah Adif. I know that if I have the temple worship and I have Mikra Megillah, that Mikra Megillah supersedes temple worship. How do we know this? We learned it last week. Midirabi Yossi Bar Chanina. If you look at Rashi, what did Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina teach us? The Darshe Mishpacha Mishpacha, because it says that families and families will read the Megillah. This refers to the families, Kohanim and Leviim, that drop what they're doing in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, in order to fulfill the Mitzvah Mikra Megillah. Good. That we learned last time. This is a chazar. The Gemara is doing us a favor. It's reviewing a few points for us. Talmud Torah Mikra Megillah. Now let's say I pit Torah study against Mikra Megillah. Mikra Megillah Adiv. Mikra Megillah triumphs over Talmud Torah. As we learned again last week, that the house of Rebbe, Rehuda Nasi, they dropped everything they were doing. They closed their gemaras to hear Mikra Megillah.
And that's even Talmud Torah Derabim.
Yes, exactly. Right. Even Talmud Torah Derabim. They closed, right, it's important. They didn't just close, he didn't just shut his own gemara. They closed the Beis Medrash. I mean, I don't know, it sounds like they left the Beis Medrash to go to the main shul in town, which if it's not the same place, I wouldn't be surprised, because it's actually, we learned last time, remember we had a question, what do you mean that Mikra Megillah supersedes Torah study? Reading the Megillah is a form of Torah study. So one of the answers that we offered a few, one of them was that, let's say, and I know, Zadie, you had a good question against this that I haven't found a good answer for, but if you're in a smaller community, there'd be a mitzvah for you, there'd be an imperative to go to a larger minyan in order to enhance the pursuei nisa, the publicizing of the nace. So the time it takes you to walk longer to get to the bigger minyan, not to worry, that's not considered bittul Torah. By the way, I'm just going to share this derech agah, because I always look, it's important. I think I've shared this in sermons in the past. This is just me on the soapbox for 1 second. We had Rysobolovsky recently as a scholar in residence. So one of my favorite Divrei Torah from Rysobolovsky was he quoted a Rebaruch Ber as to their two categories, two dinim of Bittul Torah. You see, one din of Bittul Torah is what we usually think of, what we're talking about in this context, where I have time and I squander that time. Instead of learning Torah, I am, I'm playing video games, okay? So I could be spending time playing video games studying Torah. So I was mevatel lizman. I lost out. However, Baruch Ber says there's another level of bittul Torah, which is, like in kashrus, in Yoredea, when you're mevatel something, batel b'shishim, you have a little bit of milk that falls in the chalent. It's nullified to the chalent. It's still kosher chalent. It's not basar v'chalav. So what's the other din of bittul Torah? Where one takes the Torah and takes something that's less significant than Torah, which is almost anything, and you're mevatel the Torah and make it and show that's nullified to whatever other pursuit that you have. What did he tie this into? Well, he tied it into the Super Bowl, because it's tradition in yeshivas that Rebbeim always have to bash the Super Bowl every year. So his Devar Torah every year, I was only in his class for 2 years. He did 2 years, so I assumed he did every other year maybe, is that he said, okay, Rabbeisai, if you want to do the first day of Bittul Torah and you want to waste your time watching the Super Bowl, I won't hold anything against you. Okay, fine, need some time to relax. But don't be mevatel the Torah to the Super Bowl. Don't pretend that the Super Bowl is more important than the study of Torah. At least don't do that much. So I remember when I was in YU on Super Bowl night, you had the people who were bravely learning in the Beis Medrash, and you had across the street in the Mus dormitory, there were people studying, watching the Super Bowl in the lobby of, not Mus, of the morgue. They call it the morgue, the Morgenstern building. Bad name, right? So in the morgue building. And so where do they bring the free Carlos and Gabby's Mexican food to? To the people watching the Super Bowl. And I was like, oh, hachayte nischar? You're saying not only did they leave the Beis Medrash to watch the Super Bowl, but you're rewarding them for doing it. So that's like real bittul Torah over there. You should at least bring the food to the people who are holding up the Beis Medrash, the Asara Batlanim, the 10 people holding up the world, which we'll talk about actually in our Gemara, God willing, toward the end of today's shir. So if you do one level of bittul Torah, it's one thing. There's another level of Bittul Torah that the Gemara is not talking about, which is also fundamentally important. You'll see some people consider a basketball win very important, but everyone should always remember, understanding even one kasha and tosos is more important even than 50 wins on the basketball court. And so, akan devare. Here we go. Moving forward. Talmud Torah Mikra Megillah. We said Mikra Megillah Adif. We know that Mikra Megillah supersedes Torah study. We do some of base Rebbe, as we learned from base Rebbe. Talmud Torah Meis Mitzvah, however. Here's a new thing we haven't learned yet. Let's say you have Talmud Torah and Meis Mitzvah. What's Meis Mitzvah? You are walking along the way, and you find Rachmana Litzlan, a dead body that was not buried. You have a mitzvah to bury it on the spot. So what's more important, your Talmud Torah or Meis Mitzvah? So we say Meis Mitzvah Adif. We say, that Meis Mitzvah supersedes Torah study. Midatanya, and we have a braiser to support this assertion. Mevatlin Talmud Torah lohotzas mitzvah. This is kind of pretty explicit. You don't need any wild imagination to figure out how we got it from there. It says it black and white that we stop learning Torah in order to provide and bury someone and to bring a bride to the chuppah. Avoda meis mitzvah. Okay, let's. We're continuing our tournament. Now we have Avoda on one side of the ring and Meis Mitzvah on the other side of the ring. Temple worship, the temple service, or burying a deceased. Meis Mitzvah, Adif. No surprise, Meis Mitzvah supersedes even the temple worship. And how do we know this? So this is a little bit more, I don't want to say convoluted, but you got to turn your thinking brain on for a second. You got to focus to catch this one. So a nazir is not allowed to do a few things. He can't cut his hair, can't have any wine, any grape products, and what else?
Can't be a tamei.
Very good, Henry. He can't become tamei mace. He can't come in contact with a dead body. So, however, you look in the pasuk in our friend the Torah Or HaShalem. It's the second one by Midbar Perek Vav Pasuk Vav through Zion. It says, Kol yemei hazir l'Adonai al nefesh meis lo yavo. All the days of his nazirus, he shall not come in contact with a dead body. Lavi, for his father, limo, for his mother, achi, for his brother, achoso, for his sister, lo yitam alahem, b'mosam ki neser lahav al rosho. He should not become tummy for them. Now, the question is, why did I have to specify, don't become tummy for your sister? It's very clear from the pasuk already, do not become tamei even to bury an immediate relative, which, by the way, is different than a regular Kohen. Except for the Kohen Gadol, which we talked about during our Sunday morning shiur, a regular Kohen becomes tamei to bury an immediate relative. A Nazir, however, does not become tamei to bury an immediate relative.
Except for a married sister.
Right. That is correct, Phyllis. Right. Once she marries, she basically takes herself out of her original family and enters a new one. Very good. Very good. So mivlachoso, from the extra word and his sister, we didn't need to say and his sister. It's pretty obvious already. Titania, so here's the brisa. Ulachoso, matamalomar. What's the extra word of and his sister? He shall not become tummy to come to teach us. If one is going to shech the carbon Pesach or to do a bris milah for his son, the shama shem meis lo meis, and he finds out that one of his immediate relatives died, yachol yitame, I would think maybe he should become tame, and okay, he'll miss out. He can't bring a carbon Pesach. He can't bring a Pesach offering. However, we learn Amrit lo yitame. We tell him, you shall not become tame even for an immediate relative. Rather, you shall remain pure to fulfill the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. Yachol geshem she'eno mitame lachotzo, kagin mitame meis mitzvah. Now, I would think to extrapolate, the same way I can't become tame to bury an immediate relative, I would say also I can't become tame to bury a meis mitzvah, a deceased who has no one there to bury him. Tamalomar, that's what the word, finish this up. Tamalomar ulachoso, that's what ulachoso, the extra word, and his sister comes to teach us. Ulachoso de enomitama, for his sister, he cannot become tame. Alvimitame le meis mitzvah, but a person can become tame for a meis mitzvah. So this, by the way, is something we saw in Makos, where you will have something that we took from the pasuk of Nazirus, but we didn't have anything extra to learn in the context of Nazirus. That's so we didn't use it for oso inyan. We use it for something that is eno inyan, and so we're using it to tell us that a regular person in general should not become tamei if he will not be able to bring the karban pesach. Unless it's a mace mitzvah, he does not bury his sister, but he does bury a mace mitzvah. That's what the extra word of ulachoso comes to teach us. Okay? So what does that tell us? So what that tells us is that mace mitzvah supersedes the avoda. How so? Because bringing a karban pesach, a pesach offering, is a form of service that's done in the temple. You go to the Beis HaMikdash and do it. The fact that you can become tame to bury and do a meis mitzvah, even to the detriment of bringing Karban Pesach, indicates clearly to us that meis mitzvah takes priority over temple offerings like the Karban Pesach or any other offering that you would have had to bring. Now, generally, they're not in conflict. Generally, offerings, you could bring at another time. But Karban Pesach is a great example because that is, has to be brought Pesach. Yeah, Toby.
How does this apply today, technically, like if you're a member of the Chevra Kedisha and it's not your family and they're not out in the street, but someone has to do it. And now let's say it's Megillah reading night or it's Pesach offering night or, whatever it is. I mean, how do you balance, how does that rank?
So Toby asks, I know you're asking practically, but yeah, this is actually mamish the next question in the Gemara. Next question in the Gemara.
Rabbi?
Hello. Yes, Phyllis.
I was going to say that we have an example in the Torah of Pesach Sheni, the reason for Pesach Sheni. Because they had to bury the bones of Yosef, it was?
Right. So that it seems to be something that you do post facto. It seems to assume that the burial is happening, but the question is, do you join in the burial anyway? But you're right. If someone's immediate relative had no one else to bury them, it would be no different. Certainly, it's no less than a meis mitzvah for a person who's not a relative. Kalvachomer, you would bury your relative if needed. But to get to Toby's question now, Toby asks, well, we're in the final championship round. We have Mikra Megillah, and we have, on the other side of the ring, we have Meis Mitzvah. Which one is the victor? And what the Gemara gives us is two rationales. So remember, until this point, Rava said pshitali. All these cases, everything we talked about till this point is obvious to me. And he explained to us methodically how he knows which principle supersedes which principle in which cases. But now Rava asks, this one case, though, I could really see the merit of both sides. Mikra Megillah Meis Mitzvah Haimi Nayu Adif. When you have the mitzvah of reading Megillah and the mitzvah of Meis Mitzvah, which one takes priority? So on the one hand, Mikra Megillah Adim Mishum Persumei Nisa. On the one hand, I would say Mikra Megillah takes priority over Meis Mitzvah because it has a unique element of Persumei Nisa, of publicizing an ace. On the other hand, O Dilma, Meis Mitzvah Adif Mishum Kavod Abrios. I would say Meis Mitzvah takes priority. Why? Because it preserves the dignity of God's creations. So the question is, Persumei Nisa on one side and Kavod HaBrios on the other side, which one wins when we duke them out against each other? Basta Debai Hadar Pashta. Rava, after asking the question, he thought of an answer to it. Meis Mitzvah Adif, Mace mitzvah. Here's your answer, Toby. Mace mitzvah would take priority over Mikra Megillah. Damar Mar, Gogol Kovet Habrios Shadoches Lo Sasa Shabbatorah. That Mar taught us that Kovet Habrios can supersede a lo sase, a negative commandment in the Torah. Now, so it supersedes, certainly if it can supersede a negative commandment, it can supersede a positive commandment of Mikra Megillah. Now, who's going to, there we go. The clarification I needed. Henry, go for it.
Which may be Durabunin also.
Exactly. So Henry gives us an extra level of clarification. We need to look in Maseches Brachos, where Kovet Habrios is brought up, I believe makes sense. Initially in Shas would be in Brachos. So in Brachos, it hashes that a little more. Don't walk away thinking that Kovet Habrios actually supersedes a bona fide D'oraisa, biblical negative commandment. Actually, the lo sase it's referring to is the lo sase of lo sasur, that you shall not stray from the ways of the rabbis. You ever wonder why you got to listen to rabbis in Torah? You know, we have all these mitzvos midrabanan. We have muksa, we have Megillah, presumably is midrabanan. That's a separate discussion. What exactly kind of midrabanan it is. We have so many mitzvos midrabanan. Who gave the rabbis the authority to make up all these additional things, right? You should go and tell them. Bal Tosef is an issur to add things onto the Torah. So there's a pasuk of lo sasur that tells us you shall not stray to the right or to the left of that which they tell you. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah to not disobey the commandments of the sages. So what is the lo sase that is being superseded by Kovet Habrios, by human dignity? The lo sase of not disobeying the rabbis and the sages. However, dignity, Kovet Habrios, does not supersede an Isser D'oraisa. It does not supersede a biblical mitzvah. So the classic example that comes up on Shabbos is one finds himself in a restroom where there's no pre-cut toilet paper or tissues. So tearing it, especially not on the perforation, but just tearing toilet paper that's there would only be an Isser D'rabbanan of destroying something on Shabbos. And since it's only Isser D'Rabbanan, human dignity, Kovet Habrios, supersedes the Isser D'Rabbanan. The issue is that if you look, the conservative movement in the early days, my understanding, this is where things got tricky. You see, to the layman, what the conservative movement did when they published their halakhic positions looks well-founded, the same way an Orthodox rabbi would come out with a halakhic pronouncement. But the issue is they used principles from the Gemara, but they didn't apply them correctly. A great case in point, I have to look back where I saw this in one of their responsa. They basically use Kovet Habrios, human dignity, as a reason to disregard an Isser D'Oraisa. I forgot which one it was, precisely. I think it was genital mutilation for men. It was like on transgenderism. I remember looking at it a while ago. So the issue is Kovet Habrios only supersedes a D'Rabbanan. It doesn't supersede a D'Oraisa. So that's why it's very important. You see people on the internet or in conversation, they say, you know, Vasisa Yeshara Tov, after Yechakamocha, Balafta Bedracha. Like you throw out all these metahalakic concepts, we have to know there's rules for how you can apply them. Otherwise, there's an idea of Esa Sosa Shem Heifaru Torah Secha, that why were we allowed to write? Why are Gemaras written down? I should only be telling it to you orally from what I remember. The issue was, we're told in the Gemara that if we didn't write down the oral Torah, then we would have lost Torah altogether. So we pulled out our emergency, you know, this is like the break glass, pull the lever for the alarm. So the rabbi said, it's a principle that lets them literally transgress and isser in the Torah in order to save the entire Torah. But if you don't know when and how that can be applied, you know, you can wind up uprooting the entire Torah just to serve an agenda. So that's why it's really important. Someone can read a Gemara without elucidation and walk away thinking human dignity can supersede any prohibition in the Torah. And you know what's going to happen? An individual is just going to come up with their own notion of what human dignity is, such a vague, amorphous idea, and they'll use it to nullify and neutralize the rest of the Torah. So we should never know such things, but This is literally something that happens.
I remember this.
Yes.
Say 2,000 years ago, I'm walking along a road and I find a dead Jew laying on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody around to bury him. I'm on the way to the temple to do my service. I have an obligation to bury him.
Correct.
Today, we're not concerned really with a body rotting on the side of a road. In a funeral parlor, they put bodies in refrigeration. They freeze bodies for shipment across the country for burial. Why can't this body be placed in refrigeration and put off to a time when there's no conflict on obligations?
So the issue is, in general, that it's another halacha, that one is not supposed to push off a burial time. We really try to be mizdares, and we bury as soon as possible. So we sometimes will push off a day or two, because let's say there are relatives in Florida, they need to fly in, so it's appropriate to push off a funeral if it gives more kavod to the mace. But once you're pushing things off just for random conveniences, then that's a lack of kavod to the mace to postpone the burial. That's a very important idea. So I'm glad, Zadie, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, but hearing the Megillah while performing temple service is not a random convenience.
True. And you know what? I would say, actually, back to Toby's question, which I think you're getting to, you know, if the Chevra Kadisha does their work at 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock, Lamaisa, the burial is still taking place, you know, at noon the next day. So when the Chevra Kadisha meets to do the Tahara, is it going to impact how soon the funeral is going to happen? So, right, one might say, do Mikra Megillah first whenever the shul's offering it, and then do the Tahara afterwards. I'm not the the posek for a Chevra Kadisha. Who is the posek for a Chevra Kadisha? Rabbi Zone? Rabbi Zone? Yeah, okay, good. I thought so. Okay, Rabbi Zone.
I will say you will not find the Kohen on a Chevra Kadisha.
Oh, no, you won't. Right, you would not. That would be a very big issue. We should a Kohen should never be on a Chevra Kadisha. It's a question of a Kohen going to medical school. But that's for a Monday night shiur that we'll save for another time. And yes, it is in my file somewhere. Okay, let's go forward, Rabosai. We finished. Okay, so we finished the big leagues. We concluded that Mace Mitzvah supersedes Mikra Megillah. But again, you have to ask yourself what a Mace Mitzvah is. Is forming a minion to say Kaddish at a funeral really a Mace Mitzvah? We use the term very elastically, but I think it's much more constrained in terms of what it means halachically. We'll leave it at that. We still have good things to cover. Gufa. Okay, end of discussion. Done. Now we are returning back to a little bit back to our original discussion. Don't worry, it won't be as technical as the first daf that we had. In our initial discussion that we had, we were talking about cities. So if you remember, a non-walled city lanes on the 14th. A walled city from the times of Yehoshua, or, you know, I'm passing this way, but or Achashverosh, they read on the 15th. And if it's not a city, if it's a village, in addition to generally reading on the 14th, we have a dispensation that allows them to hear Megillah a few days earlier when they would be in the city to hear it. Here we go. Gufa, on the matter that we discussed previously. Amar Yeshua ben Levi. So there'll be a number of miscellaneous halachos now that actually are pretty much related to each other very nicely. But the common theme that runs through them is that these are old teachings of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that pertain to the mitzvah of reading Megillah. Amar Yeshua ben Levi, krach v'chol asamech lo v'chol nirimo nidon kekrach. So we learned this before. A city and any of its surrounding villages that could be seen along with it have the same status as that city. What do we say means seen along with it? The distance of a mil. Tana, samach aval bishino nira, nira aval bishino samach. And so we learn on top of that, that something could be near the city even though it's not seen with it, or something that's seen with the city even if it's not literally close to it. What does that come to include? Bishlama nir alpha bishino samach. I understand I could easily conceive of a case where something can be seen along with the city, even if it's not close to it. Mishkachasla could go into Yosfa Barosha Har, like Yosfa that was on top of a mountain. So there, it's very conceivable that something can be seen with it, even if it's not close to it. Ela Samach Avishin Onira, where do you have a case where something is close by, even though it is not seen, it can't be seen along with the city? Hechi Mishkachasla, where we have such a case, Rabbi Yirmiyah Shiyoshevis Benacham, where it's sitting down near a stream in a valley, so it's not seen along with it, but it's close by. That's how we define the parameters. End of that idea. Vamar Yeshua ben Levi. Next piece of Yeshua ben Levi. Kraft sheyeshev ulbasof hukaf. If you have a city that is settled, people build houses in there, and then afterwards it is walled, nidon kikfar, it's actually the status of a village. Why? My taima, dechsiv, the ishkim kor beis moshav ir choma. If a man will sell a house from a walled city, shahukav v'sof yashav, something that was previously walled and then you built a house in there, has the status of being in a walled city. Yashav v'lo sheyeshim v'sof hukav. And not that you settle in it and then afterwards build a wall around it. Now, just by the way, this particular halacha about being in a walled city there's different understandings of this. It's talking about Purim, or it actually might be talking about a separate halacha. There's special halachos for when one sells a house in a walled city versus a non-walled city. Just briefly, the difference between them is someone who sells a house from a city that is walled, yachol agolo me'elokeach rak b'shana rishon sha'acher mechira, the seller of the house can force the buyer to sell it back to him only within 1 year from the date of the sale, but afterwards it becomes the buyer's permanently and irrevocably, unless the buyer himself is amenable to selling it once more. However, someone who sells a house from a city that's not walled, from the time of the Mechira until Yovel, it could be redeemed. And if it's not redeemed by Yovel, it goes back to the original owners of that land. And we talked about this halacha, I think, in the second parak of Makos, we discussed it. I don't want to get too involved in the technicalities. I'll be honest, I didn't exactly go through all the technicalities on it. But it's important for us to know that's what this Gemara is likely discussing. And the distinction between a walled city and non-walled city is whether it was settled and then walled, or walled and then the house was built in that city. Okay, another miscellaneous teaching of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. There's a really good one at the end that I want to expound on. So I just want to move along a little bit. And when we get to the end, I'll take questions, and then I want to do one or two tososim, actually, if we can. So if you just bear with me for a few minutes, I'll just cover a little ground. Oh, this is a really good one over here. I mean, they're all good, obviously. V'amar Yeshua and Levi, Krav she'en bo asara batlanin nidon gekvar. A city that doesn't have 10 batlanin is like a village. What are 10 batlanin? Well, what's that sound like to you? What was that, Phyllis?
People that are supposed to be studying Torah and are wasting their time.
So that's really funny, you know, because you would think, right, generally when we were just talking about Bittul Torah, people wasting time not studying Torah. But, and you would think, what are 10 batlanin? You know, 10 bums on the street, 10 yoshri kronos, 10 people just hanging around playing dominoes on the street, whatever. That was always Rosovlevsky's example when he'd say, yeah, you walk through Washington Heights, you see these people on the sidewalks, you know, like playing dominoes or whatever, or poker with each other. So Yoshe Kronos, people sit on the corners. It's mamish what it is. However, Henry, you're going to tell us what it actually is, right? Looks like you're ready for a second there.
No.
Okay. So what are 10 batlanin? You look in Rashi. Rashi Dibur Maskel Asar batlanin. Shevetilim imlachton shimitsuin tamev beis hakneses shachris v'argis. 10 people, presumably men, that they are not working, but rather because they're around shul all day for minyanim. So, you know, think of it as like 10 retirees who are forming a kollel in the base medrash, or 10 kollel. You want to see the idea of kollel in the Gemara? Having 10 people in the city learning Torah in the base medrash day and night. This is a kollel it's talking about. And by if you don't have 10 people in your city studying Torah day and night and occupying the base medrash, then you're not a real city. You're just a small-time village. You haven't made the big leagues yet. Which, by the way, I'll just make a mention. We have a new beautiful base medrash in our shul now, and we're going to be working on getting Sfarim in there and using it for learning programming. So that way we can fulfill that which is said in this Gemara. They should be spending time in the base medrash. Hopefully this year, maybe we'll take place in the base medrash one day. Okay, but my Kamash Malan, what's Reish Ruben Levi teaching us? Reish Ruben Levi comes after the Mishnayos. So Tanita, I already have a Mishnah that conveys the same idea. Ezohi ir gedola kol sheishba asara bat lanin. Pachos mikan hare zikfar. So I seem to have a Mishnah already that conveys the same point. A big city is one that has 10 batlanim. Any less than that, it's just a village. What's the Chiddush? Reish Ruben Levi distinguishes. We've been translating them the same way, but there's a subtle difference between an ir gedola, a big city, versus a krach, which also we translate as a big city. How's a krach different? A krach isn't just a big city, but Rashi points out, he explains that it's a place that has shvakin shenichnasim sham michol tzad. It has a shuk, it has a marketplace where everyone's constantly converging on there. I couldn't think of a busier place than this, than a krach. But it could be as busy as you want it to be. It could have people going into all the stores and shopping from day until night. It could be a city that never sleeps. But it's a krach, it's drichle. Reish Ruben Levi tells us, even if it's a krach, even if it's a city that never sleeps, even if it's always busy and there's millions of people in there, even though there's so many people that are visiting and that are there and spending time, if there aren't 10 people who are spending time in the Beis Medrash, learning Torah and ensuring that there's a daily minyan, then you're still just a village.
How did the term Bat Lanim get such a bad rap? If that's what it really is.
Here's my theory on it. My theory is, you know how the rabbinic Judaism comes from the Pharisees, the Prushim, you know, those who stayed away, who were very careful about Tumah and Tahara. So if I remember correctly, it wasn't the Prushim who called themselves the Prushim. They got called the Prushim by others, but then adopted that name. So my theory, I haven't seen this anywhere, is that the 10 people who hung out in the Beis Medrash, they were called the Bat Lanim by all the people who are in the workforce. And then they kind of adopted that name with pride. That's my theory of it. But the idea is they're being mevatel work in order to learn in the Beis Medrash. By the way, let me share with you, the Meiri actually has, I think, a much more fascinating take than Rashi. He really builds on the same idea as Rashi. Whereas Rashi makes it sound like it's just like 10 random kollel yungerlite who are learning in the base matters, which is a nice idea. The Meiri says, no, 10 isn't a random number. It's not just because we need a minyan with 10. There's actually 10 different occupations that hang out in the shul that are necessary for each and every city. It's not just a random condition that was made. The Meiri says, here are the categories. Shlosha dayanim. Three judges. Each city needs at least three judges. A shliach adayanim, right? Remember, we have a shliach basin. He's the guy who does the lashes. What's that guy called in the Godfather who, like, you know, goes ahead and like cuts off the horse's head? And what's his name? The conciliary. Conciliary. Yeah, like
the conciliary is the lawyer.
What's the guy who like goes ahead and like, you know, like does the dirty work? Okay.
The maid man.
Whatever it is, yeah, that's the they got their shliach, you know, they got their muscles. Shnei gabei tzedakah, two gabayim to handle charity funds. A mechalek tzedakah. All right, so you have shnei gabei tzedakah, two fundraisers for charity, a mechalek tzedakah, the guy who writes the grants for the charity, a sofer who does safras, a chazen, I guess a chazen is its own occupation, much to my chagrin, a melame tinokos, a person who is teaching the children in cheder, and before we, you know, we could afford to make all these major edifices to a yeshiva over there, a shul over there, another shul over there. They all worked in the Beis HaKnesses. They all were found over there. So Meiri says, not just stop 10 people, but it was 10 specific people who, based on their Jewish occupations, they operated out of the shul. So if you don't have these 10 occupations being fulfilled in your town, then you haven't made the big time yet. You're not a city. You're not a krach. And that'll have ramifications for when you read a Megillah. That means that you are still like a kfar in terms of reading on Yadalit and possibly earlier, depending on.
Even if you have a walk.
Even if you have a?
Even if you have a walk.
A walk?
A wall, choma.
Oh, choma. Yeah. Even if you have a wall, it would seem. Interesting. Well, actually, we're going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about a city that gets resettled. So this might relate to the point you're bringing up. From Yeshua ben Levi, krach shechar v'lebasof yashav nidon kekrach, a city that was destroyed and afterwards was resettled. Its krach status, its big city status, is reinstated. My charav, ilay machar v'chamosav, yashavin lo yashav lo. If you say that it's the walls that fell down and you're just rebuilding the walls, fatanya, that's Rav Yossi Omer, asher lo choma, av al pisha in lo achshav, ahay lo kodon lechim. But we know from a brisa that as long as the wall was there during the era of Yehoshua, it could fall down 100 years later. You don't need to rebuild it to reinstate its status. That's why Henry sent me a nice article last week about Beit Shemesh. Beit Shemesh is, as far as I know, not walled right now. But potentially, during the times of Yeshua, it was a walled city. So even though the walls are no longer extant, it would still retain its status as a walled city for halakhic purposes. So what's the chiddush rather? If we lost the yeshiva in town, we can reinstate it and get our status back. So I guess if anyone ever wants to push to reinstate the yeshiva that was once in Stanford, they know which gemara to use in their fundraising campaign.
Got a question.
Yes,
sir. My question is, derives from the fact that Lower Manhattan was originally occupied by the Dutch, New Amsterdam. It had a wall across it from the Hudson to the East River, I guess where Wall Street is now. And it was surrounded on the other sides by water. Can you have a walled city at the end of a peninsula where you don't have walls along the water?
You're saying one of the sides was water instead of a wall?
Well, say one side is a wall and the other side's a water, which would be at the end of a peninsula or the southern Manhattan.
Like that.
Geography like that.
Very interesting. Possibly. You know, it's an interesting discussion in Hilchos Erevin. If you have water, but there's a drop that's 10 tefachim deep, could that count to create a Rishus HaYachid? I think the Ramban possibly talks about this idea of the continental shelf, where eventually you go far enough into the ocean, it's going to drop 10 tefachim, but I think that idea gets rejected. Interesting, I'm not sure on the spot. It's a great question. In my limited knowledge, I haven't seen anyone address that. I guess you'd have to think of cities that are along the water. The ones that are in eastern Eretz Yisrael, for the most part, would be landlocked. It's a good question. Any cities that are on the water?
Well, Tveria would be an interesting question because Tveria had a wall they read on the 15th, but one side is the Kinneret.
So maybe that's it. You know, I mean, the question is like, how much does it need to be walled also? You know, we're using Hilchos Erevin. If there's a Pirtz of 10 Avos, well, I'm not sure if it's operating off the same principles as we use when we're talking about chutzah on Shabbos? That's a great question. That's a great question.
Or a sukkah.
Right, or a sukkah. Well, actually, I mean, Toby, you're right. So sukkah and the laws of Erevin are deeply intertwined. I mean, the first amud, literally, in Maseches Sukkah, connects the law of sukkah to mavoi, which is Erevin laws. So very much they operate off the same principles. Sukkah and Erevin are using the same principles. Okay, let's. There's a really good one at the end that I want to share that I know will interest a lot of you, so I want to make sure we get it in. Vamar Yeshua ben Levi, going to Dalet Amud Aleph. This is now 4a. You know, I love that the Gemara starts on 2a, because then, like, you get to 4, I'm like, oh, I already covered a lot of ground. We did, don't worry. So Yeshua ben Levi is going to point out a number of practical examples of cities that I have no idea where they are. But maybe on Sunday morning during our archaeology tour, maybe the guy will be able to tell us. Lod va'ona v'geya charashi mukavas choma. All these, actually, Lod, I think I do know where it is. They are all surrounded by walls. Mimos Yeshua ben Nun have. Vani Yeshua ben Nani. You think Yeshua ensured that these were walled cities, that they were built by him during his time? Fa'el pa'ab ben Nani. But this fellow, El Pa'al, sounds like he's from Mexico, actually. El Pal Benon, he built it. Who was many years later. Dixiv Ubnei El Pal Avar Aver Umisha Ushemer Hu Bana Es Ono Veslod Ubnoseha. So it sounds like this fellow El Pal, many years later, he built these cities. So were they walled from times of Yeshua, or were they not? Further compounding the issue, Ultameich. Asa ben Nani. Actually, it was Asa who had seemingly built it. Dechsev by even Asa as Arei Habsuros Asher LeYehuda. That Asa built these fortified cities, i.e., walled cities that belonged to Yehuda, and Yehuda and Binyamin were part of the same kingdom and the same territory. So presumably, he was also building these cities that we just referred to that are in the plot of Shevet Binyamin. Right? Those were our Sunday morning chumash here. We did the bracha of Yehuda, then Levi, and then we went to Binyamin. One reason is because Binyamin is right next to Yehuda. So there's, I guess you can't call that Torah Ramada. It's Torah Torah, connecting both our shiurim. Amar Elazar, Hani Mukofos Choma. So here's really how the sequence of events went down. Amar Elazar, Hani Mukofos Choma Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun Havu. They were walled from Yeshua's time. Charov, they were destroyed. Bimei Pilagish Begiva. Remember the whole story, Pilagish Begiva, where I don't have time to rehash that story. I'm even Yavin. There was a major civil war, and all hell broke loose, and things were destroyed. Va'asa El Pal, Benunhi, and then El Pal came, and he rebuilt it. Hadar Inpol, but then they fell down again for some reason, maybe wars, maybe lack of maintenance. Asa Shpitzinhu. Asa came and spitzed everything up. He refurbished everything. And Daikanami the Siva, Yorman Huda Nivnes Armaila, as he said to Yehuda, let us build these cities. Michlal, the implication is to Aram Havme Karash Mamina, that they were already cities, but he's like, let's just spitz up these cities and improve their fortifications. Good. So we know that these cities were indeed originally walled from the times of Yeshua. Final teaching, Farishu ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos b'Mikra Megillah. Women are obligated in Mikra Megillah. She'af hein hayu b'osanes, for they too were included in the miracle of Purim. Before you ask me all your questions about women and Megillah reading, I will tell you that after I read this Gemara and I learned Tosos on it, I got so interested in the sugya that it will be a future Monday night class. And my source sheet is almost done on the topic. There are so many opinions. Can women be motzi men? Can women be motzi women? Can women not be motzi women? Maybe they can, but it's not the right thing to do because of this reason and that reason. So there's a lot of opinions. I know where our shul falls on it already, so I'm not going to take any practical positions on the matter. That's above my pay grade. But I want to present to you the different shitos. So after we're done with Lo Yilvash, we'll either talk about Amalek and then women reading Megillah, or do reading Megillah and then Amalek. So lots of fun topics lined up for Purim. Purim is a great holiday for fun, engaging topics. Before we conclude, I'd be remiss if we didn't actually learn at least one of the Tosafim on this. So if you want to join me, which one? There's two good ones over here. Nashim Chayavs Mikra Megillah. Okay. Do you want to know the reasoning for why women are included, or do you want to know if women can be motzi men? What are you more interested in? Those are more interesting.
That's the reason.
Reasoning?
I thought the reason was because they're involved in the mitzvah.
Okay, so Phyllis, okay, you voted for us. Here we go. Shafi and Hayabosa and Ace, those who want to look at Tosvos to the left of your Gemara, I will read and translate. There is an art scroll Tosvos book that I think came out of Brachos. I'm not sure whether Masechtas came out, but anyone who wants to buy it, you can buy it. Pirish Rishpan, She'ikar ha'nes haya al yadon, B'purimai de Esther, B'chanakai de Yehudis, B'pesach she'b'tzchus sekanya she'osa ador nigalu. So the Rishpam understands, what's it mean, afin hayibosa nes? That women were the real protagonists who facilitated, not as facilitated, they were the heroines who brought about the miracles. In Purim, it was Esther, who was the heroine. In Hanukkah, it was Yehudis. And Pesach, the women who got their husbands to have children, even though they were all miserable in Mitzrayim. So that's one understanding. That she'ikar hanis hayayadam, that it was really the women who, if anyone should be chayev, it should be the women, because it was the women who led the charge. Ukasha, however, Toso says this is doesn't fit with the language used in the Gemara. Excuse me. The lashon she'af hein. What does it mean, af hein hayibosanes? They too are also included. Mashma she'hein tfelos. It sounds like the women being included is actually opposite. It sounds like they're exactly tfelos. It sounds like they're an afterthought.
Secondary.
Exactly. It should really say, according to Rishpam, should say Afhain, it should say Shehain, that they were the ones who caused the nes. Not they too also were included in the miracle. So Lakach Nirali, Shafhain, how you besuffic the Hashman Laharog. It means that women too would have been killed and destroyed during Purim. They also were potential victims. The Chayim Pesach Shayim Meshubalos the Paro in Mitzrayim. Women were also subjugated to Paro in Egypt. The Chayim Chanukah Exir Haysim Oda Lehen. And the Chanukah as well, women also suffer due to the decrees of Antiochus. So it would seem a very fascinating machlokus within Tosfos. How to understand the role of the women in these holidays. You know, if I can say in jest, one side is the, you know, the feminist side and the other one is the chauvinist side. You know, Mechilas Kvodim, I'm just using this as a joke to lighten things up. But you have one side that wants to say that the women were on the vanguard who made the miracles happen. And you have diametrically opposed. No, the women, like, they happen to have also been saved along the way. So they too should be included in the mitzvah. Two fundamentally different ways of looking at women's roles in this mitzvah. And my theory, by the way, and I'll present this more in the shiur, is depending which role you think women had in the mitzvah, in the story of Purim, might influence to what degree women are chayiv in Megillah and can include others in their reading. I would think that if they were the main ones to fulfill the mitzvah, who brought up about the geula of Purim, they should have the full chiyuv. If they're an afterthought, I would think they would have a secondary level of chiyuv to men. So I haven't seen anyone that lines it up. But when I was learning through the sugya, it sounded like a good sushtel. Maybe there's a connection between philosophically where you see women in the story of these holidays and how that translates into their level of chiyuv. But I'll look more into it, and God willing, a future Monday night shiur will elaborate on these tosafim and further Ian on this topic. So I'll just officially end the shiur right over here and wish everyone a good Shabbos. And you're welcome to lock off if you like. I'll stay on for a few more minutes and address any questions, starting with my grandfather.
We on?
Yes.
Okay. It would seem to me that if there is not a man who can lay the Megillah, it's a busha. And for that reason, women, that's one reason why, hopefully, women should not be faced with the necessity of laying for men. Also, it's linked to a truck. That's singing. And men should not hear women singing because it's stimulating.
So Zadie, you were mechaving to two separate opinions. One is Tosus Maseches Sukkah brings up your point. It says Zilu Milsa, that it's basically, my best translation is like what you said, it's a busha for men not to know how to lay Megillah, that they need to rely on a woman to do it for them. And the other opinion that you mentioned is brought by the Kolbo and a few subsequent halachic codes, if you want to call them that, that bring up the issue of Kol Isha. So both of your suggestions are well-sourced and are on the source sheet. So God willing, future Monday night class, you already got, I think, a quarter of the material in there. So
very good. Do you ever think that a woman can learn for her husband?
It might be a low plug. So Zadie, we will hash this all out. These are all the suggestions you're giving are well documented, actually. So you're on point here. I don't want to take any more of your questions because you'll give away my entire shear.
Rabbi, can you suggest when you have that shear, a special plug for women who don't usually listen to the shiurim?
Maybe interesting.
Part of this?
I can try. I was thinking also, Ann Peskin asked me to speak to the women's club sisterhood about what's it called?
A good with women.
So I told her, I gave her a few two topics. One of them was women in the midst of Megillah. So if she accepts that topic, then hopefully a lot of women who otherwise wouldn't be coming to the shiur will get to hear that topic. But I agree with your point regarding advertising. I'll try to do that. Okay.
It's a good one.
Yeah. I try to pick good ones. You know, I ever tell you my woman and principle? Did I ever tell you guys this one?
No.
It's called cheap rabbinic marketing. Take any topic like the size of a mill, the measurement of a mill. So if I give a shiur called "How long is a mill?" maybe like 3.5 people show up to it. But if I put at being women and the measurement of a mill, all of a sudden, like the entire base measurement got packed. People are coming in. You know, people will be RSVPing. You know, that's what, Marina, that's what we got to do for our adult ed program. Any topic you have, it can have no connection. It could be like, you have a topic, the mitzvah chauffeur. Okay, chauffeur, interesting. And like, women and the mitzvah chauffeur. Oh, now I need to hear this topic. So it's like cheap rabbinic marketing. It's the women and principle. You just put women and append it to the beginning of any sheer topic, and your stats for attendance rise exponentially. That's my theory.
I think you should try it.
I don't want to be too contrived, but women and Megillah, we'll try that one. How about that? Okay.
Yeah, we're always talking about how to get more people out, and specifically, there are a bunch of people in Ravona who don't come out. Those are the ones who you might want to address.
All right. Okay. This is it sounds good. Thank I feel you. Like we're doing chazara on our meeting, but all good Great. Points. Yep. I'll send it. I'll give it to you, Phyllis, and you can put it in their mailboxes. Okay.
I will do that for you.
All Absolutely. Right. We should make a brochure. Yep. Imagine if we made a brochure and we sent That's that out. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
A single sheet. Right.
Great ideas. Great ideas. Okay. All right, let's be in touch. Have a good Shabbos, a good night, and looking forward to learning soon. Take care.
Okay. All right.